Romans 13. We're going to have a little history lesson. To get the full impact of what Paul is saying here. Romans 12 was about all of the interrelationships primarily between believers and then the believers to the world. But Romans 13 is believers' relationship to authorities. And it's extraordinary for a couple of reasons. Nero became emperor of the Roman Empire in AD 54. He was, I think, 16 or 17 years old when he became emperor. And previous to his, I can't remember who it was, but what's that?
The when you started to talk to
Previous to Nero, quite a while previous, a rabbi had convinced the emperor that the Jews should not be subject to the one provision in Roman law that the citizens had to pay obeisance to the emperor. And he was able to convince them of that because he showed him in the scriptures how that the Jews were always to pray for whoever was in power. And so they were the only ones that were, of all of the Roman colonies, if you will, that were exempted in these years at the time of Christ from being subject to having to pay obeisance to. And so when the believers, when Christians started in Rome, the Jews just considered them another Jewish sect. And so they were also under this protection where they didn't have to pay obeisance. Well, then what happened was that all of a sudden there was a whole lot of non-Jews that became Christians. And so I think it was at the early years of Nero that the Christians were no longer a part of that. They were no longer considered a Jewish sect under that protection, but they too had to begin to pay. They had to, just like everybody else, give their allegiance to the emperor. And this is when all of the persecutions of the Christians started.
It was like worship.
Yeah.
They had to worship the emperor.
Yeah. And so it became a big deal. We know the last letter that Paul wrote was 2 Timothy, and we know he had to appear before Nero, and we know that all these guys testified against him, Alexander the coppersmith and others, if you remember when we read about that. And so he was subsequently martyred in Rome. But then the big thing happened was that... That's irritating.
Yeah.
The big thing happened was the fire. And that happened in 64. And Nero proved to be a good guy. I mean, he allowed the homeless people into the palace, and he out of his own money, accounts, he paid for the food and everything for a whole lot of the Romans that were in trouble, that had lost their home. But then this weird thing happened. During the course of the fire, the Christians, many of the Christians, thought it was the end. And so they were joyously out throwing their furniture and stuff on the fire. And so then all these legends happen about Nero fiddled while Rome burned and all that crap. But there were several court cases, many court cases, where the Christians were convicted of hating humanity because of, primarily because of them throwing their, they were witnessed throwing all their belongings on the fire. And then, but obviously then further digging happened. And so the Christians were severely persecuted during these last years. And then in AD 67, that's when the Bar Kokhba rebellion started, that was led by Rabbi Akiba.
Well, that was later.
Huh?
That was much later. This is like the first
The first one, I'm sorry. Yeah. I'm not Akiba, excuse me. It was the first one was when the Romans destroyed Jerusalem in the war and they finally destroyed it in AD 70. So Romans 13, and this all this stuff was going on. So Romans 13 is an incredible document because it abruptly stops in terms of this, how we should love one another and everything, and then goes to the Christian's response to the human authorities. And so let's, with that as sort of an, everybody understand a little bit? Except for my stupid error there about the Bar Kokhba rebellion.
They were just like starting to be, have a different relationship with the authorities because the authorities were now coming down on them.
So right.
Now he's writing this stuff about, should we, you know, probably a lot of them were thinking we should dig in and, you know.
Right.
These people to do something.
Right. They were beginning to be persecuted is what I was trying to say. Because they felt we were out from under the edict of the former emperor that protected the... Anyway, here we go.
The persecution was for their stupidity rather than their faith. Is that true?
Who?
You say they're beginning to be persecuted, but why? Because they acted...
No, because they wouldn't... Because the Christians were taken out from under the covering of that former,
okay.
So they couldn't worship the Caesar or the emperor. All right, that's a bad history lesson, but it gives in general the scenario here. So then Paul, all of a sudden, he comes on and he says, "Let every soul be subject unto the higher powers. For there is no power but of God. The powers that be are ordained of God. Whosoever therefore resisteth the power, resisteth the ordinance of God. And they that resist shall receive to themselves damnation." Now, this... This is kind of big. This isn't because they had a law or something that separated church and state or whatever, like the things that are going on here. They were being severely persecuted and killed. And yet Paul says, "Let every soul be subject unto the higher powers." Now there's been volumes written about whether or not and what this means and what it applies to, but I believe it says what it says. Do you see how, just stop and think of how many wars have been started in the name of Christ, how many righteous things have happened, and it creates a huge difficulty, especially when you start thinking about Hitler and some of the really odious rulers. But here, the reason I brought all that up earlier is because I wanted you to see the condition that Paul was under when he wrote this. And so the question is, you know, if you're, today is a voting day, and I don't care whether you vote or not, but the point of it is all of this Christian movement in politics is a little strange, considering this, whether it's the right wing or the left wing, or whether it's Democrats or Republicans, it doesn't matter. That's not what I'm talking about. All right. Let every soul, is every individual, be subject, is hupotasso, which means it's a military term. Let every soul place himself habitually in subjection to the powers, exousia, which means authorities who are over the citizens for whatever reason. For there is no power but of God. The powers that be are ordained of God. Now, can we believe that? Just, if you know anything about history, stop and think about how big this is. The powers that be are ordained of God, therefore he that resisteth the power resisteth the ordinance of God, and are subject to damnation. Now, damnation there doesn't mean eternal damnation. It means judgment. But what... I can't tell you how much this troubled me as a new believer. This really bugged me, because I was, you know, all of the stuff that's going on and all of the... I mean, it is something that every one of us, if you have any inkling towards this at all, you have to wrestle with. Let every soul be subject unto the higher part, or the authorities, whoever they are. Whosoever is, because all of those authorities are ordained of God. And everyone that resisteth that authority resisteth the ordinance of God. That is extremely troubling. It's troubling to everyone. But where would you come down on it?
What do you mean come down on it?
What would happen if you were, you know, whether it's racism or and the institutional racism that happened for all of these years, or
genocide.
Huh?
Or genocide.
Or whatever. Where does your faith stop and action start?
This doesn't excuse any civil disobedience at all. This doesn't excuse civil disobedience. Protest.
It doesn't excuse it. It just means you understand that you're going to jail.
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, that's the thing we're talking about with Georgie Benz and all those people who actually had this come down on them. And following this outline... it kept them from going nuts, I think it would, because then you know that God was behind everything anyway, and so, you know.
Yeah, there's that famous story about, I think he was Romanian, the Romanian pastor who that's really bothering me.
Yeah, here he goes.
You go out and protest the city services.
Yeah.
There was... I finished this book a couple weeks ago. It was Billy Graham and his relationships with the various presidents.
Could you speak up a little bit?
It was a book about Billy Graham and his relationships with the various presidents. And it was all right. There was two really good chapters in there. One of them dealt with Graham and the Civil Rights Movement and how he wrote... he and King had a rift over civil disobedience. And Graham took the role that as Christians, I think I emailed you about this, possibly. Christians, even though the laws are unjust, should obey the laws. And King cited, and I'd like to read this, cited with St. Augustine about that an unjust law was no law at all. And Graham was of the opinion that if you decided a law was unjust, disobeyed it, there'd be anarchy. And King was of the mind that the law was unjust, therefore you were released from your obedience. And I think it's just a matter of, it's a matter of conscience.
You know, it's not a matter of conscience. That it's a matter of conscience for those in the world, but this is what this issue is that we're talking about. If you think it's a matter of conscience, then you're just saying, well, everybody does what they... But there has to be a standard if there's truth. And so what is the standard? And this is why this was so troubling to me. Let every soul be subject unto the higher powers, for he that resisteth the ordinance of God, and receive to himself damnation or judgment. Now, this isn't a matter of conscience, Sue. Because if we are believers and we believe that this is ordained or this has some, it's not just something that we can ignore. Maybe it wasn't troubling to anybody else. It was super troubling to me. Because it removed any kind of idea of heroism or individual action or, you know, all of these kinds of things that, you know, the crusaders and all the righteous causes. There's no words that I can have that can explain to you how troubling this was to me. But I finally understood it. It's the whole thing about vengeance is mine, saith the Lord. Do we wait? Can any of us wait long enough to have whatever our opinions and systems of political thought and fairness? In other words, where do we break from it?
Yeah, everything in this faith leads you back to God, and nothing sends you on your way to
human action.
Yeah.
And so it was extremely troubling. I think I've made that point. Because it isn't a matter of conscience. If it's a matter of conscience, all that conscience is all the idiosyncrasies you learn before you reach the age of reason. And so here we have an issue that is really separates the wheat from the chaff. You know, what was it, Joe Givens that said, render unto Caesar what is Caesar's, and unto God's what is God's. But if Caesar demands what is God's, you don't resist. You go quietly into Caesar's prison. Now, we think of resistance as heroic. I mean, that's probably why it bothered me so much.
Without resistance to the governing authorities, wouldn't be a United States.
Well, I understand that. How well I understand that. That's one of the reasons that this bothered me so much. But what if this thing is right? What if the night of the last day began at the cross? And what if all these righteous things that we've done over that we think are righteous as Christians since that time was simply an act of rebellion that delayed the perfection of his bride? And so to me, what this does is it, as Wade said, it takes everything, no matter how righteous, no matter how good the cause, no matter what it is, if it takes it out of it, as believers, we must always wait on him. I don't know if I can. I mean, if we were attacked or whatever was going on, I don't know if I could do this. This is really my confession. if it was against the law for us to name the name of Christ, I'd probably name the name Christ. But all I want you to, the reason this morning's Bible study, I'm going to quit early because I don't like that sound. But I want you to see this. Don't just see it as a philosophy. See it. And if you don't understand what I'm asking you to see, then let's talk. But my whole personality just hated this. All right.
Well, I had a practical example with the car being broken in, because my response was to think of, just to keep on thinking of responses. Responses that we could do together, or responses that I could do, you know, research, you know, just, I kept on thinking of ideas. And finally I'm like, well, all these ideas are just ideas, but none of them are prayer. And I threw all the ideas out.
Maybe all the Quakers are right. That's all. All righty. I'm huh?
I was thinking about the Quakers.
The bottom line is that the kingdom of God doesn't have anything to do with anything that's going on in time and space.
Right. And it's as it should be. Everything.
But boy, we want it to. Any other thoughts, Mr. John?
I was thinking when you talk about the discussions I used to have with my dad. This is my dad's favorite chapter, obviously, because he was an authority. You know, it's like authority is like, you know, it doesn't really validate anything that the authorities are doing. It just says that God is working through them.
Yeah.
You know, and so you get the.
There's no righteousness in
reading Revelation, all the things about this age is evil. You know, so it's like, but it's this thing, you know, we're talking to the boys about you know, Job talks about Satan works for God. It's like, how can that be? Well, I don't know how it can be, but that's the way it works. And if you can see that big picture, then it all makes sense. And you can be like, George Yves, there's one of these people who, you know, wait for 15 years on prison or something for their life to pick back up, and you know, it's like, you can do that, you know, otherwise you'll go nuts.
Well, Mr. Bojo, any thoughts on this?
I'm thinking that it's possible that your reaction is because your background was in politics.
Yeah, I was thinking that too.
And this reduces you, this diminishes you.
Reduces me to nothing.
Blow to your ego,
right? Yeah, you remember when, right after I had that experience, I mean, there were people, and then it was on the television, and there was all kinds of people about wanting me to run for office again now, I'll be doing it for Jesus. Fortunately, I didn't pay any attention to that.
It ruined your ideas of world domination.
Yeah.
Well, and you know, it kind of blows up the movement and causes and everything. It comes down to, again, the moment by moment.
Yeah.
You know, I was thinking about the Quakers because they didn't involve themselves in the war. They helped, you know, they helped with the railroad, the people leaving, but they just responded to a need, you know, as it came into their household. But they didn't go out and recruit.
What are you talking about, like the Underground Railroad?
Underground Railroad, yeah.
You have to specify which century you're talking about.
She was skipping. She's moving around centuries.
Because they were very active in the 60s, though, with the anti-war movement. They were also very active in the civil rights movement.
Those were the bad Quakers.
No, actually, they were very brave.
No, it's not a matter of, it's not a matter of, you know, again, it's this thing that to me, the best description of it is that George, I think it was George, who said this, that if Caesar resists? I mean, if Caesar.
Yeah, that was a quote. That was his quote. I mean, you know, that was the way they lived their lives. It was like, we're going to
run down to Caesar.
Have a worship service, and when they come bust us up, then we will go into prison. We're not going to like feel like, hey, I'm surprised you're here to.
But the point of it is that they didn't. go against, they didn't try to overthrow the government. They just...
And yet, eventually, the government was overthrown.
Right. And they didn't, there's no example where, you know, that's the whole point this document here, or the New Testament, is the only model we have for a church. And not once did either Jesus or any of the disciples or any of the writers ever take a position on any political issue. Not once. They never talked about regime change. They never spoke against abortion or anything, because they were not of this world. And it's so tempting to get drawn back into the world by some good thing, because it gives us function, it gives us purpose, it gives us rightness. And we can't ever have it. No matter how and no matter what the issue is, we are never right. Amen.
Buying Girl Scout cookies
back? Probably is when you did it.
I got snookered because I bought 4 boxes of Girl Scout cookies, and 2 of them were the Samoas or whatever they're
Woo-hoo!
Called. And I thought the other things were macaroons, whatever I ordered. They weren't.
The macaroons have been outlawed, I think. In
I know.
States.
And so that's why I brought them over here.
Oh, well, thanks.
Whatever they weren't what I wanted.
So, can I get
take it, big guy.
Wait, you forgot to yell at Gary this morning.